what was the reasons. This is all the news. I mean, we're holding ourselves as much as we can to know.
Nabil Rai, we'll have to leave it there. And Dinky Ramalee, thank you so much for being with us. Our condolences all. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us. Democracy Now! Is a listener-supported grassroots global news hour. You make it possible when you donate at democracynow.org. Thank you so much.
Hi, I'm Tim with your WUSB concert billboard on Tuesday, April 5th. Joe Sample, 7:30 p.m., Stage 1, Fairfield, Connecticut. Toots Thielemans, Erto, Kenny Werner, and Oscar Castro Naves, 8 p.m. and 10:30 p.m. at the Blue Note in Manhattan.
Hi, I'm Keith with your WUSB concert billboard for Wednesday, April 6th. Peter Mulvey and Pole Girl, 7:30 at Stage 1 in Fairfield, Connecticut. Explosions in the Sky at 8 o'clock in Radio City Music Hall in Manhattan. The Acoustic Africa Tour, 8 o'clock in B.B. King's in Manhattan. Ben Carroll, Tom Chapin, also 8 o'clock at Deep Wells Mansion in St. James. Toots Thielemans, Erto, Kenny Werner, and Oscar Castro Neves, 8 o'clock and 10:30 at the Blue Note, Manhattan. And Kathy Krieger, 7 p.m. at Fork and Vine in Glenhead. This has been your concert billboard for the week. Tune in to WUSB each day and hear more about where your favorite performers are playing. Or go online, concert billboards at WUSB.fm, which has the schedule for the coming months, so you can plan ahead. Concert Billboard is a service of WUSB Stony Brook, 90.1 FM. And this week, we're asking you to give generously to WUSB. Call 631-632-6901 and pledge now.
And you're listening to WUSB Stony Brook. It's 6:01 time once again for Off the Wall. Very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you. Kyle over there.
Hi.
Well, here we are again. We're back. Last week went so quickly because we the whole show pretty much was devoted to reading excerpts of the premium we were offering.
Yes.
Which was the 2600 Letters book, which we're going to offer again tonight, okay? Because people were begging and pleading us almost as soon as we left the studio last week. So, okay, fine. For a pledge, what was it? $50, what was it? Yeah, $50 for a pledge, 631-632 WUSB, 631-632-9872. You'll get an autographed copy of...
Dear Hacker.
Dear Hacker, yeah. And we have to autograph those, by
both
the way, for
us,
people
yeah.
last week. But... yeah, so that's because we're being extra generous here. We want to support the radio station. We hope people out there want to support the radio station as well. And because Finn's in the other room taking phone calls, and hopefully his time won't be wasted. And we have the Johnny Cash special coming up in just about an hour, so that's going to be fun as well. All kinds of special activities coming your way. But this week, you know, we didn't bring the book intentionally, because if we brought the book, we'd just spend the entire hour reading from it again.
Right.
That's how addictive it is. We had a whole show planned last week, and we didn't get to do any of it because we just kept diving into the pages of the Dear Hacker book.
It became a bit of a distraction. I don't think I was able to keep up very good conversation because I kept putting my nose back in this
you
wonderful
kept
book.
You reading in the car afterwards for the entire evening, and it really, you know, it got to be kind of annoying. And eventually, as we discussed many times, I had to throw the book out the window, and that was a shame for everybody. But, I mean, you have to do that occasionally just to be able to communicate, and... It's an addictive book. I know.
Yeah. Well, it did get me out of the car eventually.
Eventually. 631-632-9872. If you want that in your life, then give a call. And $50 for the autographed book. You can also call and get all kinds of, look at all these things on the wall, the WUSB premiums that we have. We have the WUSB knit cap, the WUSB scarf, the travel coffee mug, the ceramic mug, which is, I guess, the stay-at-home coffee mug, military cap, baseball cap, and, of course, a whole selection of shirts and sweatshirts and various things like that, all for all manner of pledge amounts from $25 all the way up to $75 and beyond. Of course, you can join the 90.1 Club and get all sorts of special deals as a result of that. $90.10 is the 90.1 Club, and of course, our frequency is 90.1. That's why we have that. 631-632-9872 is the phone number. And would be nice to see a call come in, because then we'd launch into the rest of the show, you know?
Yes. Yeah.
And so one person out there has the power to kickstart the program here.
Absolutely. And the 90.1 Club was actually somewhat popular.
People like that.
You get a t-shirt or sweatshirt of your choice,
mm-hmm.
plus two other items from the other categories we just mentioned that you were admiring. So please do call in.
631-632-9872, which spells WUSB. 632 doesn't really spell anything, but WUSB, that's the cool part. And we basically have been raising funds now for the last couple of weeks. I think we're more than halfway to the goal, the overall goal of the station.
That's awesome.
And yeah, that's really going to help us out, keep things going.
Yeah, absolutely. We talked about this a little bit last week, but community radio is really important, and WUSB is one of those types of radio stations. So please call in and support the station, all the different programs. If you like this program, if you like other programs that are on, if you haven't pledged, if you've pledged already, whomever, wherever you are, whatever you're doing, please consider making a pledge of support and allow us to thank you.
Yeah, and it's annoying. We all know how annoying it is to hear constant begathons going on various outlets. But just keep this in mind. This is a very small operation here. Not small in regards to the number of people involved. We have well over 100 people that volunteer their time here and do all kinds of productions. But small insofar as what we get out of every dollar, how we keep the place running on a shoestring budget, it really is. And it's incredible. It's inspiring to see how we're able to do this. And I think a lot of people could learn from other broadcast facilities what you can do with a non-bloated budget filled with administrators and paid staff. No, you can do that with a bunch of volunteers from the campus and community that just want to put out something different, alternative, and
Good radio. Yeah.
Good radio is what it's all about.
Yeah, there's definitely a focus on that.
And it's a necessity. It's an unpleasant necessity that we have to come on the air and do this. But we try to make it as pleasant as possible. And I think, you know, when people get something else in return, in addition to the actual signal of the radio station, which you can enjoy anywhere in the world, doesn't have to be limited to Suffolk County, New York, which is where we broadcast. Mm-hmm. But you can take WUSB anywhere with you. And the thing is, a station like this, with a couple hundred people involved and all kinds of history and all kinds of diversity, that kind of thing is vanishing from our airways for a number of reasons, not the least of which is simply inability to continue operating based on lack of funds. That has happened to a number of stations. Other things that can happen, stations can be taken over. We know NPR has been under a lot of fire recently. There's been all kinds of initiatives directed against them for being too leftist, I believe, which is the most absurd thing I've heard in a long time. They really are pretty middle of the road as far as I can see. Maybe it's to the left of what some people would prefer, but it's to the right of what other people would prefer, and it's a pretty valuable resource. But that said, NPR is very pervasive in the non-commercial radio world. They tend to take over lots and lots of frequencies, and here in Suffolk County, you can hear the same program maybe 8 times over at the same time on different frequencies. Mm-hmm. Those are frequencies that could be community radio stations, could be run by live people, not simply satellite feeds from outer space someplace. Radio is a very valuable commodity. It's something that I got involved with in my college years, and it changed my life because it's something that allows you to be creative, to learn a lot about technology and about culture and music and alternative thought and news and things like that. And it's a great way to reach people, to actually know that your voice is going out there somewhere, somehow, and people may or may not be listening. And sometimes they call in and you get to connect in that way. And of course, we all grow up listening to the radio. We all turn it on in our cars or at home. And It'll never be replaced, by any kind of device that simply allows you to play all kinds of music. I mean, it'll replace those stations that do nothing but play music, but it won't replace the sound of somebody actually speaking live into a microphone.
And keeping it local, keeping the smaller community stations alive, adds to the diversity on the airwaves. And instead of hearing a playlist or the same nationwide radio personality, mm-hmm. you get different people from their local communities coming in, telling people, the listeners, their audience, telling them what's going on in their neighborhood, in their street, what matters to them, and or the impact of global events. They can discuss it in a regional context, and that's truly, truly important and a really special thing, and it is, as you said, sort of going away, and you can stop that and support local radio by calling in and pledging to the station.
And you don't have to be local to support local radio. You can be overseas someplace. People have called in from overseas to support this radio station because they still hear fresh sounds, fresh viewpoints. They think about things that they didn't think about before. And hopefully we can get into some of that this hour, like we usually do on Off the Wall. But it is important that we get a call or two coming in, 631-632-9872. If you're driving around in the local area, won't you screech to a halt and make that phone call and pledge whatever it is you can afford just to keep us going and to give us that boost that we need so desperately at this time of day. Or if you're somewhere else in the world, well, you can simply call from wherever it is you're listening from, and we'll be thrilled to hear from your distant land, and you'll know that you're supporting something that means a lot to a lot of people. 631-632-9872. Again, $50 donation gets you the Dear Hacker book. That's basically a collection of letters to 2600 magazine over about 25 years. It's 600 pages, and there's all kinds of material in there, all kinds of funny, informative, sometimes nonsensical letters that people have written to us at the magazine. And it's a real window into the world of the hacker community.
That's absolutely
something that I think a lot of people will enjoy. It's something your parents will enjoy because it's not all techie talk.
No. I was going to say there's a lot of intersections with the wider world that can be sort of observed and experienced through the hacker perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And people that, you know, wonder what is a hacker or why would a hacker be a good thing, or that sort of inquisitive nature can really be spoken to through a book like this. So for $50, we're offering that. If you pledge, please call in 631-632-9872. Finn is standing by. He's ready to take your call.
Finn is falling asleep because the calls aren't coming in.
And really?
We do have to bring in at least one phone call. Can it be that there is not one person out there with the ability, the willpower to call in and support this radio station, pledge whatever it is they can afford just to keep us going? You're listening. Obviously, you're listening to us, so you're getting something out of this, and odds are you've listened in the past when we're not begging for money, and maybe even called in or written in to us. Well, it's something that is necessary. Wouldn't be doing it if it wasn't. We have items that we're offering as donations to the radio station, the 600-page book. We also have the WUSB shirts, sweatshirts, coffee mugs, what have you. There's all kinds of things.
Any pledge level is a vote of support, as little as $10, $20, whatever you can afford, really goes a long way. Again, mm-hmm. you're saying, you know, the station's concerned mostly about putting good local radio out there. It's not about big salaries or what our advertising revenue is like. We don't have that. It's a community radio station with people that come here because they like radio and they wanna produce good stuff and put it out there on the airwaves. There's no big budget that we're working from. This is purely community radio and local perspectives coming to you, the listener.
And to give you a sense of the perspective, the other stations simply dwarf us. In comparison to their budgets, to what it is that they need to raise. The other radio station that we work at, when we ask for money there, sometimes in an hour or two, we raise as much as this entire month-long marathon here at this radio station. That just gives you an idea of the perspective, the differences. In what it takes to run these different kinds of radio stations, because there are degrees in non-commercial radio. It's not all the same thing. We were mentioning NPR before, very different animal than what we have right here.
Right, though they don't have advertising, they're underwritten. Mm-hmm. I think that's the term.
Well, some of those underwriting announcements sound like ads. They really
do. I know,
do.
They do. And even in public television sometimes you see, you know, mm-hmm. wow, that's the foundation of a guy who started a car company, or that seems to be a foundation of somebody in the tech industry. You know, they're always very closely related.
And they're using qualitative statements saying, you know, we're better or something like that. And it's really not that far away from an ad. And the reason they're going down that road is the same reason that everyone is becoming increasingly desperate, because there simply isn't enough money to go around to keep these things running. So they have to sell their souls to a degree. We try not to do that here, and I think we've maintained that pretty well.
Absolutely.
Over the 30 plus years that we've been on the air. It's hard, and it's impossible without listener support.
Yes.
So again, 631-632-9872. Boy, what are we gonna have to do to get that first phone call to come in?
All right. One phone call. That's all it takes, people. Please call in.
Well, maybe the transmitter is broken. You know, that does happen sometimes.
Should I check? Do I have to open any?
Let me open check. Up that whole panel there. Be careful. Hopefully, the engineer's not listening to this. Yeah. No, not that one.
Sorry,
not that
sorry.
One. Not
whoa,
that. Put
whoa.
That back. Put
all
that
right.
back right away. Don't touch that wire.
Is it?
You see the plaque on the wall? That's for the last guy that touched that wire.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right. I'm sorry. I'm not going to.
No.
I don't think I should check anymore.
All right. So. Well, we got a phone call at least.
Did we?
Yeah.
All right.
You need to risk your life more, Kyle. Apparently, that's what it takes.
It's an open wire.
Yeah. Well, you know, we don't allow children in here for that reason, because they tend to rummage about where they shouldn't. And be careful. Yeah. No, the transmitter apparently is working.
Good.
And that voltage is certainly working.
All right.
And you know, we keep things together here. We do. We do the best we can on a shoestring, but it really is. But to give you a more of a perspective, all right, for those of you who are still doubting that that we're as humble as you could possibly be, all right, the entire goal for this month-long fundraiser, $15,000. $15,000. And you know how small that is in the perspective of non-commercial radio. Basically, most stations that you hear these fundraisers that happen a lot more often than what we do, they expect to make $15,000 in a couple of hours. They're shooting for $1 million every fundraiser. So look at where we are as far as how much we are trying to raise here on this particular radio station. And if you're listening to us from a different part of the world, well, okay, there's your evidence right there that it means more than just a small signal in a relatively small area. Obviously, the station has captured your attention for some reason, and it deserves the support because of that. So please keep us going. 631-632-9872. We said we'd go with the show if you got one phone call. We have the phone call, so we're gonna do that. But please, it doesn't mean we don't need more phone calls and more support. Imagine, since I just told you what the goal was for the entire month, if say five people called in, just five. That's not very many.
No,
we have five lines on the phone. Five people called in,
we can handle that.
And they pledged $50 each for the book, and they all got the Dear Hacker book, which is a great thing to have signed, autographed by you and me.
Yes, I'll sign it.
And well, imagine five people did that. That's five times five. Hold on, no, I can do this. Five times I carry the zero.
22 carry the.
No, I carried the wrong thing again.
25 zero.
No, you do it this way. The diagonal of the fives. Really? $25, that doesn't seem right. How could we have less?
I think you have to do a factor tree.
Then one pledge, if we multiply it by five.
Yeah.
Oh, no, because there's the zero. I put it over.
Oh, yeah.
I had the zero in front of the two instead of after the five. $250, that's what it is.
Whoa, whoa.
Yeah.
Oh, wait.
We just figured something out. If five people were to call in for $50 each, that would be $250.
That's right.
Yeah.
And that would be a big, big, big help to us here.
And this person just pledged $100.
Mark just pledged $100.
Mark from Huntington Station, bless you.
And Mark is pledging and not even asking for a premium. It's because he loves this station.
Wow.
Loves it.
That's
incredible. And we want to make sure we call 631-632-6901. Let's keep that number in rotation out there. 631-632-6901.
You notice Finn says a different number. It's an ongoing discussion on the WUSB mailing list. Which number is better, 6901 or WUSB?
Well, I only say the one I can remember.
Uh-huh. You can't remember WUSB?
Not as a number, okay. You know, because it's numerical. It completely throws me off.
That's true. But, and the 6901, the 901 is supposed to mean 90.1.
That's right.
A lot of people don't know that.
That's right.
And nobody knows what the 6 means.
So give us a call right now, 631-632-6901 or...
631-632-WUSB. Which is...
Oh, I don't...
9872.
9872. It's kind of sequential, you know, it goes down, 987 and then 2. Thank you so much, Mark, for that call. But if there were five marks out there, imagine that, 5 times 100?
So that would put us at 350?
5,000, no, wait.
No, 5 times 5. Oh, I was adding the 100 to the 250.
I put the 5 in front of the 100 and I had 5,100.
Whoa.
That was the mistake I made there. No, you're supposed to do 5 times 100.
That's
you know what?
500.
We've got a Mac here. There's a Macintosh.
That's
500.
No.
Right here, and I could do the calculator.
I don't think I got my divisor right.
I can't figure out how to work this calculator. Oh, boy.
Is it it's a remainder 5. That's what it is.
No, they're holding up a sheet of paper. $500, they say. All right, but that has not been confirmed. But if we had five people as generous as Mark calling in, it would be $500. Now, okay, let's say that's true. All right? $500, that's 1/30th of the way to the overall goal of the entire fundraiser, the month-long fundraiser.
That's
imagine
pretty...
that. Five people could bring us a 30th of the way, and that's significant. Believe me, that's significant.
Yeah, for an entire fundraiser. I mean, geez. That's...
Not just for the day, not for the week, for the entire fundraiser.
That is the goal.
Yeah. So that's where we stand here in this particular place. It's all attainable. It's all attainable, and people pledge whatever it is they can afford. We take Visa, we take MasterCard, we take American Express, we take all that, and we give back as much as we possibly can. All right, one more time, 631-632-9872 is our phone number. All right, two issues of the day. You heard about this nuclear thing going on?
Nuclear thing.
Nuclear disaster coming
Fukushima.
On. You know, I don't understand. We don't talk about this enough. I mean, it's in the news, but... Really, it's not in the news enough. And I don't mean the reports saying like this story that said there are traces of radioactivity in the rain in New York. Okay, you know, that's interesting, but it's not really the story. Even I know, and I'm as anti-nuclear as they come. I know that the trace amounts in the rain in New York are insignificant, and that they're not going to really affect anything here that I know of. I could be wrong, I suppose. But this is not about the United States, not this time. It could be about the United States next time if we don't learn anything from this, or if we don't listen to the past or anticipate the future. Right now, this is a global story involving a horrible catastrophe that's happening. It's ongoing.
Yeah.
There was a story yesterday.
Ongoing and compounding.
And getting worse. It's really out of control. It's completely out of control. I just want to read a couple of paragraphs
Please.
From this. A story that was on CNN yesterday. Japan began dumping thousands of tons of radioactive water into the Pacific Ocean on Monday. An emergency move, officials said, was needed to curtail a worse leak from the crippled Fukushima nuclear power plant.
Now that
paragraph right there, dumping thousands of tons of radioactive water into the Pacific Ocean. Now, I know people are going to say Pacific Ocean is really, really big, you know, and it's going to be swallowed up very quickly by all this. No, I'm sorry. I don't buy that. You know, if you volunteer to stand in the middle of all the radioactive water being dumped on top of you inside an ocean, see how you feel, you know?
Just in defense of this, this is low radioactivity in this water, because what they need to do is clear up the containment facilities. They have tanks, they have a condensing system, a series of pipes. They're just getting a fix on, you know, whether what pipes they can actually transport and pump the highly radioactive water that they've been spraying and trying to circulate.
Right, so there's two different kinds of water. There's low radioactive water and high radioactive.
Correct.
Water.
Yes, I've been reading, and so
how do they keep the two from getting mixed up?
That's a tricky one. But basically, they've got these storage containers that are full, and that has low radioactivity water, like normal coolant waste, and so they're gonna offload that so from whatever storage unit. And then that's going to make room for sort of medium radioactivity water, which they'll move into those storage containment things. And the highly radioactive water will then have a place to go in the condensing units.
Okay, all that said, all that aside, is it not possible to bring in more containers and put the water in those containers instead of in the ocean? Then you can at least keep them safe, or bury them, or something, whatever it is you have to do. You can do that. Do you really have to dump it into... And the reason they're doing this is because they found a leak. They found a leak into the ocean.
Yes.
And they don't know where the radioactive water was coming from, which is another disturbing thing. But the solution is to dump radioactive water into the ocean as part of the plan to stop the leak into the ocean? I'm lost there somewhere. Are these two different issues?
There's a possibility of that.
All right.
They need to be able to have a place where they can pump highly radioactive water because they're going to have to remove the highly radioactive water lest it continue to leak.
Okay, so that's the highly radioactive water that's leaking into the ocean. And you say the water that's being dumped into the ocean isn't highly radioactive, but it is radioactive.
That is my understanding. It is lower radioactivity water, and what that does is makes room for the containment of much higher radioactivity water. Higher water that is higher in radioactivity needs a place on site, and they have storage facilities, but those were holding regular sort of low radioactivity water. So they're trying to pump out the spaces, these turbine buildings and generator rooms or whatever. They're trying to pump those out because apparently there's a crack in one location where there's very high radioactivity water that is leaking already into the ocean. And that's where they've been measuring these really high levels. So in order to pump the highly radioactive stuff into something that can contain it, they need to clear space in their existing infrastructure to make room for the really high level stuff.
Wow.
So it is related, but I think there's two different leaks. There's a leak, and then there's pumping of and dumping of to make room.
Here's something else that really kind of bugs me here. Yes. Authorities, they don't even know how much radiation is actually getting out. After some high-profile errors, little new information on water, ground, and air radiation has been released since last Thursday. And you know what the reason for that is? Because the dosimeters being used don't go above 1,000 millisieverts per hour. So they're well above that, and they can't measure it. So they just stop giving out information. That is a situation that they're dealing with right now.
Absolutely.
They don't know. And I think that's what we keep coming back to is the fact that there's so much that is unknown here. They don't know how the leak happened. They don't know the effect of the accident. They don't know what the long-term ramifications will be. And you know what? We as a human race, we don't know what the effects will be on situations like this, Chernobyl, TMI. We don't know until it happens. There's a lot about radiation we don't yet know, and we're not prepared to deal with safely. I'm not saying there's no future in this. I'm saying the way things are right now, it's very irresponsible to put people in harm's way when something like this could happen. And people have been saying something like this could happen for many, many years, and they've been dismissed as hysterical and just not realistic at all. Well, here it is. It happened. It happened. And you talk to people in this country, and invariably they'll say, well, you know, that couldn't happen here. What do you think the people in Japan, the authorities in Japan, would have said a day, a week before this happened? They would say, no, we're fine. It couldn't happen here. Folks, things like this happen, all right? The unforeseeable is what happens almost all the time.
Yes.
So that's what you have to think about, these worst-case scenarios. And here we are with a worst-case scenario. This happened on March 11th. It's almost a month later, and it's still out of control. I don't recall Chernobyl being that out of control. And was Chernobyl only one reactor? Here we have at least four.
Yes. And it was a complete meltdown at Chernobyl, and they buried it very quickly because they knew it was a complete meltdown. It was a different reactor design, somewhat different and older. However, it's still there's sort of a lot of talk about the way TEPCO, the Tokyo Electric Power Company, the way they've handled this. They've been trying to salvage this reactor complex more so than other people from the outside are thinking is realistic at this point. And basically, they're not, of course, not going to be able to use it again. As soon as they start introducing salt water, from the sea into the sensitive piping and stuff for this reactor, it couldn't really be salvaged. Mm-hmm. But they're not encasing it the way they did at Chernobyl, and they're not taking those steps. In fact, why, they still have people working there. Is that even a consideration? They're trying to mitigate this, because if they just leave it, it's going to continue to melt and stay hot. If you read about some of these isotopes and radioactive materials, the nasty ones, like the reactor that has recycled plutonium that's either being repurposed or reprocessed. I don't really understand how that all works. I think it's either from weapons being recycled into power making material or vice versa. I think it's from weapons, but basically they use old weapons grade plutonium to use as a fuel, and it's got this mixed fuel. One of the reactors has this, and that is basically really nasty stuff, because plutonium is one of those radioactive materials that sticks around a lot longer. And so you start talking about half-lives and stuff like that. And that's actually one of the real concerns, is that it just stays hot and continues to melt and emit these really nasty particles. And so if they can mitigate it, if they can slow down, if they can cool things, then the melting process won't continue. But there's starting to be people, like a sentiment that of people that are saying, look, this site isn't safe enough for people to be around. There's all this chaos going on. It's starting to look like a situation where they're going to have to just walk away and bury it in concrete, or what, like, you know, the kinds of things they had to do with Chernobyl. And that's really scary, because and I've heard this described as a knife edge situation, where it's really just hinging, like, very precariously, because you do want to get you want people there so that you can affect change, so that you could, if you can, potentially slow down these processes. You want to slow them down as much as possible, because leaks and fission, I guess, and these reactions, if they don't stop and they don't reach the cold shutdown qualities, they'll continue. And with people there, you can actually maintain some sort of effort to control and mitigate the long-term effect. But again, so that's why there's still activity going on there, because the more we do now, the less long-term impact it'll have. And that's really why people are still working there, and why they're taking it very slowly as far as, like, giving up or you know, covering it over completely.
Thanks, by the way, for the person calling in, because that keeps us going here. We can continue talking about issues. Our phone number is 631-632-9872. Please pledge what you can afford. Every little bit keeps us going, and we're offering the Dear Hacker book for $50 pledge, 631-632-9872. Now, okay, on the subject of nuclear plants, here's the thing, okay? I've had this debate with a lot of people, and, you know, I think maybe I've sort of fallen asleep at the wheel here, because when I last really was into this whole issue, it seemed like most people around had strong doubts about the safety of nuclear power, and that seems to have subsided. People are now more willing to accept it as inevitable. And I think a lot of the people who are anti-nuke over the last couple of decades must bear some responsibility for this, because we kind of let the ball drop here and didn't keep talking about it. And it sort of crept up behind us, where people actually believe this now. They believe that this kind of thing is not going to happen to America, that we do it better. And, you know, remember Katrina, okay? Sometimes you can be surprised by how badly things are organized and how there is no plan whatsoever. And in this particular case, I think we can find that many, many times. And third world countries operating nuclear power plants, how well an evacuation and rescue plan do you think they will have if something like this were to happen? It really is it's cause for concern. But, and I'll continue this in a moment, we have another thank you there?
We do, yes. Tom.
Tom, thank you, Tom.
From Babylon.
Babylon.
Thank you, Tom.
Yes.
And he does have an idea he'd like you to read, if you can read my handwriting there, for reducing the need for nuclear energy.
Reduce use of electricity. Well, Tom, you hit the nail on the head. You did. That's exactly what we have to do. But there is a slight danger in saying that too much, because then people say, okay, that's a threat to my lifestyle. Reduce use of electricity. That means I can't have my TV set on. I can't have all my lights and things like that. And, you know, regardless of how much we have access to, we should be conscious of how much we waste, and we shouldn't be wasting anything. But we don't need nuclear power in order to keep our lights on, in order to keep our television sets going. We're not talking about having brownouts or just basically reducing everyone's enjoyment of life. That's a separate issue. People need to be a bit more conscious of what it is they do and how they can leave less of a carbon footprint on the globe. In this particular case, though, nuclear power has proven to be way too much of a risk for what it is that it produces. And I don't think you need any more evidence than what we're seeing right here. But if you do, okay. How about the high-level radioactive waste that is produced by every single nuclear power plant in the world? All right, I want to read something. This is from the Wikipedia page on high-level radioactive waste management. it's not one of those garbage trucks that drives around, although one day I'm sure it will be. Yeah, high-level radioactive waste management, how can I help you? No. High-level radioactive waste management concerns management disposal of highly radioactive materials created during production of nuclear power and nuclear warheads. I'm not even getting into nuclear warheads today, because we have enough to deal with just nuclear power plants. Now, the technical issues in accomplishing this are daunting, Due to the extremely long periods, radioactive waste remained deadly to living organisms. Of particular concern are two long-lived fission products. And I hope I'm pronouncing this right. Technetium-99, the half-life of that is 220,000 years. And iodine-129, the half-life is 15.7 million years, which dominates spent nuclear fuel radioactivity after a few thousand years. Basically, what this means is that you need to keep nuclear waste in a safe place where people won't come upon it for huge amounts of time, longer periods of time than recorded history has been around by far. And I just think it's really kind of naive, extremely naive, to think that we're going to be able to keep this organized for that long a period of time. I mean, I am reminded daily of how quickly things fall into disarray. People forget about certain momentous moments in history. Records are lost. And things that you really think would last forever simply don't. So I don't think that we'll be safe from this for even a couple of hundred years, let alone tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions of years. I really don't think that that's something that is realistic. Yet that is something that is necessary for every nuclear power plant to be able to have some kind of a plan. And it's almost to the point of absurdity where we think that we can keep it together for that long. There'll be all kinds of civil wars where records are destroyed. There'll be invasions from outer space, maybe. Who knows? There'll be natural disasters, man-made disasters. And somewhere along the line, we're going to forget just where all that nuclear waste is until we come upon it and there's some horrible catastrophe as a result. Not a good idea.
Yeah, it's not conducive to life. And in that, I think it's not sustainable. You know, you want things that support life to be part of where you get your energy from. Getting energy from something so deadly to biological life forms and people in their natural habitats and other organisms on Earth, not just people alone, it just seems pretty backwards. And you got to remember, this is an industry. This is a for-profit industry. These nuclear power facilities, as well as weapons and that kind of technology, is definitely something that people are making money off of, and that's kind of scary. And I think that's why in the past couple of years it's been branded and sold to us as something that is safe because of the technological advances we've made. And you know, technology's great, but it tends to break down every now and then, and you got to have the skills to be able to deal with that breaking down. And if you're just, you know, rationalizing these kinds of really dangerous, deadly things, you know, as something that is doing something good, and you're downplaying the danger through technology as a way of dealing with the danger, I think you're being very misleading. Mm-hmm. And if you're making a profit, I can only wonder what your motives are.
Well, it's not something you have to worry about,
right?
Because the effects of this are going to affect a whole lot of generations ahead. They'll have to deal with your greed, your short-sightedness. You know, there's nothing more pathetic than somebody who bites off more than they can chew as far as technology goes, where they think they understand something, and they try to tell the world that, yeah, we've got a handle on this, when they don't. They really don't. They need to learn so much more. And again, I'm not saying there is no future in this. I think there is very much a future in nuclear technology, but we're not there yet. We're clearly not there yet. Maybe there's all kinds of other things that have to be done first before we can get to that particular stage of our development. But if we get there too soon and we try to do too much and assume that we can control the entire planet and nature and time, we're going to have a reckoning to deal with. That's going to be very, very unpleasant, not just for the people that made the mistake, but for everybody, all the people that have no say in this. They're the ones that will be suffering. And when you bring this up, I find invariably one of the things that that you're asked is, well, okay, then what's the alternative? As if all of a sudden we have to become experts on energy production and all kinds of other alternate ways. I don't have the answer as to what is the alternative. I know there are many alternatives, and some of them people roll their eyes whenever you mention wind power or solar power. It's time we stopped doing that. It's time we started looking into it as a real solution, not simply a pipe dream. You always hear the word pipe dream whenever somebody mentions solar power. Always. There are other things. Yeah. There are other evils that are less evil. And I guess fossil fuels is one of them. It's certainly pretty evil, as the BP spill proved last year. But then again, you had the same apologist for the industry there saying, well, this isn't so bad. You know, the Gulf is going to recover. Gulf hasn't recovered, and it's not going to recover for quite some time. There are disasters that can take place with any kind of technology, and they're exacerbated if you don't take the precautions and if you don't accept the responsibility. Now, that's certainly the case for oil, coal, what have you. But wow, nuclear power, where we're talking about millions of years and radioactivity that does God knows what that we don't have any understanding of, and all kinds of misinformation being spread around on both sides, obviously. That's where I think it can really go wrong if we don't think about it very carefully and come to some rational decisions.
And I just would like to emphasize, as far as solutions go, diversity of solutions. I mean, really, that's what's great about, keeping small radio stations like this going. You have diversity of voices. You have diversity of stations from all kinds of parts of the country. And same thing could be applied to sources of power. You know, I'm sure that the things we've learned about nuclear technology are here to stay, and we'll continue to develop that technology. But, you know, within reason and not on such a huge centralized scale. I don't think that's necessary. Not if you truly have like a diversity of solutions that are sustainable and that are utterly, you know, completely different, you know, not interdependent and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And you really want that as the mix of where you're getting sources of energy from.
And be a part of the dialogue. Have people become a part of the dialogue, not just the people in charge of the industry and the governments, because right. They don't always have the best interest of the people at heart. They don't always ask the right questions. They're not the ones that feel the effect nearly as much.
Right. Absolutely. And, you know, people should be involved in how they get energy and stuff like that. I think just the ease and convenience of a lot of industrialization has maybe made people lose sight of, you know, how important power is and that kind of thing. And I think people are starting to wake up to that and feel like a sense of ownership and maybe want to come up with their own sources of energy because of things like this, and really take a little bit more ownership on
well,
providing
one,
it for
that's
themselves.
One way to go. That is one way to go. It's not the only way to go.
Sure.
And I don't want to fall into the categorization that people who oppose nuclear power simply want everybody to use windmills and solar power and nothing else. I mean, that would be great if we can make that work. And I think if we poured money into it and development into it, we could make that work somehow. But there's all kinds of other fields to study. What I'm saying is that very often people in charge of technology, people are developing things, especially when they have some kind of self-interest at heart. Mm-hmm. They make assumptions, they make mistakes, and they don't really care as much as they should. And case in point, we had two nuclear power plants that were supposed to open here on Long Island, in Jamesport and in Shoreham. And both of them never were completed because of the public opposition, because the evacuation plan was studied very carefully. And Long Island is an island, you know. If you're out east and there's a disaster, where do you go? You have to pass by the disaster to get off the island or take a boat somewhere. And boy, that didn't seem palatable to a lot of people. Once they started looking at the details, they realized, wow, this is really bad for us. Let's, even though this plant cost a lot of money to build and it was sort of forced upon us, we're going to swallow it and say, no, don't open this. Let's do something else instead. This doesn't work for us. It's an example of bad planning. It's an example of not listening to people, not caring about the people. And if you need more evidence of this, all you have to do is look back in the past. Look how many times we got it wrong. Doctors were recommending brands of cigarettes at one point to their patients. You know, we have a history of just getting things very wrong.
Yes.
And not doing enough study. I mean, we don't know the effects of things that haven't been around for that long to be able to say, well, this is not going to have any health effect. We don't know that. It hasn't been around long enough to be able to say that definitively. But one other glaring piece of evidence, those of you familiar with New York City or Queens specifically, right near, I believe, Astoria, there is an electric plant there. Right there on is it Roosevelt Island or is it Queens? It's on Roosevelt Island. No, it's not on Roosevelt Island. It's on Queens. It's by Astoria. Yeah, it's the one with the smokestacks by the Queensboro Bridge. All right. If you've ever been to New York City, you ever passed over the Queensboro Bridge, or if you do that in the future, look for these. I think they're red and white smokestacks. Well, the original plan, or not the original plan, there was a plan a few decades ago to make that a nuclear power plant. To make that a nuclear power plant right next to New York City, right across the river. That is the kind of planning. I mean, even people who are pro-nuclear, I think, would be somewhat shocked by that plan, to have something that close to a huge city like New York. Now, here's another thing. We had 10-mile radiation, 10-mile evacuation zones. They put up all these sirens in Suffolk County before they opened the plant, which they never did, but they put up the sirens. Nobody knew what the sirens were for. Nobody really was trained in what to do if they went off. But for 10 miles, I think it made it up to Port Jefferson for the Shoreham nuclear plant. That was the last siren. They had all these sirens basically spread around, and that was the zone that was considered to be an evacuation zone in case something really bad happened. Well, if you look at the story that happened just now in Japan, what did the American government say? What did the American military say to its employees, to their personnel? They said, anybody within 50 miles, we'd like you to evacuate. 50 miles. So which is it now? 10 miles, 50 miles? Nobody knows. But when something happens, all of a sudden the rules change. And there's another thing. The rules are constantly changing in Japan. When they were reaching a level where it was too dangerous, the radiation levels were too dangerous to have workers around, they simply raised the level of what danger was. They changed the rules. They changed the numbers. And that's how they get around things.
Wow. The U.S. government changed it to 50?
They said 50 in that particular case, which just goes to show nobody really knows what's safe.
Wow. Yeah, but you're absolutely right. I mean, things being changed, and you know, they'll take it to the legal limit or adjust it, you know, so that it's not going to then, you know, cause people alarm and all of that. But you know, having sensors that don't read the levels that are actually in the area, and that's got to be telling. It's like, okay, they're going to make the legal limit higher, but our sensors can't even pick up the limit. I mean, you got to look at that stuff and say, you know, this is a lot more out of control than anybody's that they're leading us to believe. So, you know, you got to, I don't know, continue to, I think, be vigilant. And I think we should look at this, you know, as a globe, as a bigger community, because it's going to affect us. It may, you know, be in that small area right now, but, you know, we all live and share the same sea, the same mm-hmm. habitat here on Earth.
And
so
we live in a world where people develop diseases and nobody knows why they develop diseases.
Yes.
And I'm sure we all know people that has happened to, and it's a horrible tragedy to family members, to loved ones. Why did this person get this particular horrible disease and not this person? We don't know. And I'm not saying you can point the finger directly at things like this or at all kinds of other things we don't really know enough about. But the fact is, we don't know enough about it yet to be able to say for sure this is completely safe. We just don't. And anyone who says that is, I think, fooling themselves and probably a lot of other people.
Yeah, absolutely. And we move around a lot, mm-hmm. too. I mean, a lot of the stuff is going to be all over because, you know, people, products, all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So definitely something to watch. And, you know, we really, really hope that this gets resolved. Really smart people and everyday people, you know, pay attention and make sure that this happens, that this gets taken care of, that they have all the tools they need, and that we can come up with some rational solutions so we can actually get to a point where we can go forward and perhaps choose other forms of power, or at least look back and say, wow, we learned a lot. We're going to do it differently this way everywhere. So
I don't think they're building any new nuclear power plants in the States, are they? Are there plans to? I know Obama was big into this, and that was really disturbing.
I know they're decommissioning Hanford.
And that's the thing. They decommission these things after a while, so they're just completely useless after they build them up and spend. That's the other thing. You don't really save that much money from these things. It costs a lot, takes a lot of effort, and, you know, you burn a lot of fossil fuels making the things in the first place.
Yeah. It's interesting to look at the decommission levels because, you know, they have various ways of classifying a decommission, and, you know, some of them are up to 60 years before someone can walk around there.
I know. That's the thing. Even 60 years is a long time to not be able to use a particular piece of land for anything or for nature to reclaim it.
Right.
But the nuclear waste zones, oh my God, Yucca Mountain or whatever they want to put these things. And occasionally you hear about radioactive waste being transported across Europe, causing all kinds of protests.
Yeah.
We're not ready yet for any kind of a solution for that. Maybe when the day comes where we can launch a rocket and fire it into the sun, that might be, I could consider that being a solution, because I don't think anybody's going to complain about that. The sun already has all kinds of things going on there. You think that might be dangerous?
Wouldn't it blast it back at us or something?
If it went all the way to the sun, it shouldn't.
It shouldn't?
I'd be more concerned about when you lift off from Earth, rocket crashing onto Earth. I'd be more concerned with that.
Do we need to anger the sun?
Well, not any more than it already is. But the point is, that is about as far as we need to go before we can deal with things of this magnitude.
Right.
This is not a good solution, burying the stuff in our mountains or somewhere where we think people won't be.
Yeah, that's not going
to... Yeah, it's... Really, it's not going to fly. All right, you know what? We're out of time. We can continue this discussion. I wish we could take phone calls, and we will take phone calls on this and other issues in the future, as we do. For now, we can accept your correspondence. Please write to us, otw@2600.com. That's off the wall, otw@2600.com. Again, our phone number, please, for those of you who are still listening, 631-632-9872. And we are offering the book for $50, the Dear Hacker book. And we are offering all kinds of WUSB paraphernalia for all kinds of other amounts, as people have been calling in and getting. Join those people. Keep us afloat. Keep us going. This is one thing that has been proven to work. Listener support does keep community stations going. 631-632-9872.
Good night, everyone.
Yeah, we'll see you next week.
Absolutely.
Stay safe and non-radioactive, hopefully. Except for the radio. Yeah, that kind of radioactivity we like.
Yeah, it's good radioactivity.
There's good, there's bad. Shout, everybody shout. Hey, wait up. I want in, I want out. Hey, Jada. Run, walk this way, that way. Find me, love. Hurry, cheese, eat it on your knees. But later. Go, cat, go. That message you run. Gotta be a fake, a breaker. From labor, I am studying UCD types behavior. Hey girl, there's a minion palm. You can't wait, huh? Perhaps I'll flee my bench to chase her. Go, cat, go! In the pitching hour, go snap your wings to chase her. Go!
feel tired. Dolly melts it.
I'm the V line, C line, A line, free line, high line, best line, left line, fine line, breaker.